Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The Survivor Specialist Bill and Will are back, and today we are recapping episode number 5 of Survivor 48. We have a massive blindside. We have 2 very incredible emotional moments, and one of them that just, I don't know, man, it might take the cake. It might have just topped all other emotional moments in Survivor history here. I'm very excited to dive into this episode. I feel like this was a unanimous one. You know it was an emotional moment, and you know that like everybody was feeling the same way when you text Blake and Blake says, no, I'm crying just like everyone else. Because Blake's looking for the moon when the sun's out, you know? He's looking for nighttime. And he texted, no, I'm crying just like everybody else. This was a really great episode of TV. I'm so happy that that we got to this point and that it lived up to the hype, because Survivor and CBS and all the promotion, they were really talking about, you know, Jeff Probst cries, what's going to happen? And I mean, this lived up to the hype. I thought this was absolutely phenomenal TV, not manufactured, just raw, authentic. This is who these people are. And kudos to the entire cast, and especially to Eva, to Joe, and to Star. I have to say, like, Star, I know I've been a little hard on Star in this podcast, but Star's moment of like being able to say, this is a serious thing, this is a different thing than what I might have been thinking was going on the entire time, and just having like the understanding of that moment, I thought Star was absolutely incredible tonight. So I just want to start off by saying all of that. But Will, how you doing? Did you watch with like family members? Did you pretend you weren't crying? What was going on?
No, I was tearing up, Phil. I couldn't hold back the tears. And honestly, since we've been doing this podcast, I'm trying to think, you know, we started in what, season 29. And I think that's right about the time when Survivor really decided, hey, these human emotional moments that we've had over the course of the show, let's try to get more out of them. Like let's make more of them happen. Let's manufacture them in some way. I'm looking at you, Cerie Fields, Balance Beam, and Game Changers. Mm-hmm. You know, that was billed as like a very emotional human moment. And when you see these ads and these trailers, you're like, okay, what are we really getting here? And this was none of that. This was, you know, pure human emotion. I don't know how you could watch this and not have tears in your eyes. They were running down my face. Jeff, the first time Jeff has ever cried, I mean, that is real. He's the only person that's been on the beach and been at the challenges for every single episode, every single day, essentially, of this show. And we've never seen him cry. So, yeah, this was amazing TV. And, you know, we've had some big emotional moments throughout the show's history. I don't know if any of them are quite this real or quite this human in some odd way. I don't know, Phil. I mean, it did definitely get me, and I usually be leaning a little bit more to Blake's side when it comes to this stuff. Like, okay, like, let's save the tears, or like, why are we building this up for TV? Like, there's none of that coming from me after tonight's episode.
I mean, the thing is, like, yeah, we are, you know, we're a little bit more cynical on this podcast. We're not all flowers, sunshine, and rainbows and all that stuff. And so, you know, when this was coming up, I'm like, what is it going to be? Because most of the time, and, you know, Jeff, I give Jeff credit where it's due, but most of the time when Jeff hypes up something, most emotional moment you're ever going to see, you're like, okay, sure. Like, again, we talk about the Cerie crossing the balance beam thing all the time. Could have went my whole life without that ever airing. That should have been an extra scene that maybe got cut from even putting on YouTube. Like, I didn't need it. That's not what Cerie's story is. We saw Cerie come out and dominate the game enough times. That it's not like, oh, wow, but now she can cross a balance beam. It's like her game wasn't the physical one. I'm not proud of her for doing this. Proud of her for convincing Eric Reichenbach to give up his immunity necklace. Like, that's what I'm proud of. So when I sit down and I see this play out, and I think what was incredible about the way that this was done, and this is all I could think the entire time, is Jeff knew, we as an audience knew, Eva knows, and Joe knows, and nobody else does. And I thought the editors did an absolutely phenomenal job of letting the audience in on the reactions of the people who knew. Because if you're standing there on the mat, like, look, if, I don't know what their actual reactions were. We didn't really see them. But if you're David, if you're Star and you're sitting there and you're like, Eva, calm down. Like, what is going on? You have every right to be like that because you're playing Survivor. You don't know Eva's whole story. You don't know what's going on. You just met this woman a couple days ago. And so if you're sitting there going, get it together so we can win this challenge, like you can't crack under pressure like this, that's a fair reaction. But I think it's incredible as an audience, we know what the deeper meaning of this is. And so when we're getting Joe's reaction with the breathe, sis, stay calm, sis, all of that, when we're seeing Eva have her full-blown episode here, when we're hearing how Jeff is handling this, he even kind of changes up his wording and stuff on some of what he's choosing. And it ultimately leads to this really great moment between Eva and Joe. And at that point, Eva really has no choice but to share with the entire tribe what really was going on. And I think like every single person on that mat, it's one of those moments where it's like, this is bigger than the game. And it is just, this is who Eva is. Like, this is who Joe is. This is who Jeff is. And like everybody on that beach got to see that and say, wow, we are a part of a massive moment. This is great. Let's do this. And I thought it was so expertly handled. And, you know, credit to the editors too, because I think they did a fantastic job with it.
Yeah, I mean, I was worried for Eva, you know, she's freaking out. And if you don't know why, or you are definitely, if you don't know she has autism or has, you know, any other ailment, like what is going on? You want answers, you're confused, even if you're not on her tribe. And then even after the challenge is over, you know, she keeps, you know, she's like hyperventilating, she's like having trouble breathing, she's having an episode. And I mean, the way, I like how Jeff too, obviously he calls this out and says, Joe, why don't you go over? Because I mean, Jeff at this point knows that, you know, Eva's confided in Joe, mm-hmm. and that they've shared this together. And then after he even explains, like, I felt I had to call it out and like, sorry, Joe, if this is like ruining your game or like upending, you know, your game in some way by exposing this very close relationship that you have with Eva that wasn't known to the other members playing this game for $1 million. I do think that's where like Survivor does at its best. Survivor takes these very human moments and then look, we're still in a game. And I think Jeff handled that really well, where he acknowledged it and didn't try to like brush it under the rug. And it's like, hey, we're like on the same page here. Like this moment means more to, you know, Jeff, Joe, Eva, then the outcome of whatever happens in the game, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought that was really well stated, and it needed to be stated.
And I think it was very clear that Joe wanted to go over there. And I think that's also why Jeff was more willing to call this at that moment, because it was very clear that Joe wanted to go over. And you know, for all of us who watch casually, don't really know what the rules are. Like Jeff said, we keep the tribe separate. Like if you watch Australian Survivor, after a challenge ends, they're all high five, hug the other tribe, whatever. And we saw in Redemption Island, actually one of the biggest moments of that season, which leads to the downfall of Matt Elrod, is him going across tribal lines. But Survivor really does try to keep the tribe separate so that they can't share information, so they can't pass advantages, all of that stuff. You know, even though it had some of the better moments in the 20s, such as Heroes versus Villains, but what do I know? And so when Jeff said that, where he, you know, he acknowledged that we don't let people go to the other tribes, but in this moment, Joe, if you need to do it, and Joe goes and does it, Joe didn't want to break a rule, but you could tell that he was hurting to get over there and help her. And ultimately, it creates, again, one of the best, most authentic moments of the show. This is just so authentic. And I think, again, when I voice my frustrations with the new era, a lot of it comes down to manufactured drama, whether that's rolling dice or, you know, manufactured human moments, whatever it is. This is really what Survivor is all about. And this is what we loved about the show early on. How are human beings who don't know each other, who would never meet each other, going to act in this high pressure situation when their backs are against the wall and they're playing for $1 million? And we see that in season one with Rudy and Rich. And now we're seeing it in season 48 with Eva and Joe, where it's going beyond the game, right? It's going beyond just, it is changing people's perspectives. It is changing the way people want to treat other people. And that's what Survivor is all about. And I think in the new era, we've lost that because it has become a little bit like a carnival. It has become no whammy, no whammy. And I feel like getting these types of moments, I do hope that Jeff and production, when they look back, they say, how can we get more of that without having to have them cross a balance beam. And I think that we're going to see, we won't see a moment like this ever again, but I think the focus of Survivor post 50 might be a focus on the human element a little bit more than we've seen in the 40s, because we really haven't seen it all that much.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, I don't know if I need to, now you obviously said we're not going to see this moment again, but like, I don't need them to go out now casting and how do we match this or how do we top this?
Yeah.
Because that's, then we're falling into this trap of let's take any small human thing that happens or try to, you know, make what's the phrase, make a mountain out of a molehill. That's what we did with the balance beam and Suri, and like that's not what we did here. And if now we're going out and looking for ways to like, well, how, what insane moments can we come up with and then go cast towards that, then that's not really fitting the bill for what this was either. You cast your players, you let them play, you let their emotions take over, and what naturally happens, it's not going to happen every season, but you will get good moments, you will get good television without trying to make it happen. Obviously they made a choice here to cast someone with autism, someone that has this, and that is a major choice from casting. You hadn't seen it in the first 47 seasons, so you know there is part you could argue like, hey, they chose to cast someone like this because they wanted to tell this story, and good on them for doing so. But I don't think we need to like look at this and be like, okay, that was a highlight of season 48, now we're going to go produce more seasons, we want more of that, and go after that in a kind of, I don't know, a contrived way where you're not naturally letting it happen. So but this was phenomenal. This was great. I'm crying. I mean, my eyes were full of tears. I'm not crying now, but I was when it was airing.
You're just crying because you're stuck doing a podcast for another 49 minutes. That's what you're crying about right now. That's what's upsetting you, right? I mean, you know, you're trying to go live your life. No, I mean, I totally understand what you're saying. And I think when I'm more talking about it, I think what the new era was doing early on was, it was like, okay, like, bare bones, what are we going to do? We have a smaller production team because of COVID. Like, what are we going to do in 41 and 42? So they kind of changed up their storytelling technique and everything like that. And then it kind of went back a little bit in 43 and 44, but it has been Jeff talked a lot about, we want to get back to like the adventure aspect of it. So we're going to make the provider a bigger role. Honestly, from a TV perspective, from a viewer perspective, that's a hard thing to express on the TV in this day and age. We all have seen it so many times, like watching somebody catch a fish underwater in Fiji. We've now seen it for 20 seasons. I don't care. But I think that this, you know, just figuring out how is your cast truly going to interact? Because there's another moment in this episode that we haven't even talked about yet. And it's all of the Vula tribe laying together on the beach, telling the stories about their parents and what their parents had to overcome to get on the island. And I'm not sitting here saying only cast people now who have parents who had these like horrible, horrible circumstances, right? Like these terrible life upbringings, had to live through Jim Crow or had to live through revolutions and all of this, and are lucky to be alive and those kinds of things. But it is one of those of like, you get somebody like Camilla and you get somebody like Kyle, and they might not seem like allies off the bat, but there are things that they will find that they have in common. And you, as a casting person, you know so much about them before you put them on the TV. It doesn't mean you're going to force feed each thing down everybody's throat, but I'm hoping that we get more of this, like, how is your cast going to interact, more than how are the players going to react to not having a vote and losing this and this twist and that twist and blah, blah, blah. Because for as great as, you need to have big moments on TV in 2025 because you'll lose your audience if you don't. But at the end of the day, why do people watch every show they watch? No matter if it's reality TV or scripted TV, it's because of the characters. That's what it's about. And you don't care about the story if the characters aren't interesting during that story. So I'm hoping that we get more of this, but I do agree with you. I don't want it to be like, okay, how do we get another Joe and Eva? And in the early seasons, they did think about that, right? Like they started to be like, oh, Roger and Elizabeth really worked. Oh, Pascal and Aaliyah. Like they did think about that stuff. And,
sure.
And Penny and Jake. Like we don't need that exactly this, but I'm hoping that that's more of the focus.
Yeah. And I think a good example of kind of the manufactured drama or human moments came in 41 and 42 with the introduction of these flashbacks or the backstories, where it felt as if, you know, what, 15 out of the 18 players, maybe even all of them, I don't really remember those seasons all that well, but it seems that everyone had at least a photograph shown of them in high school when they were picked on, or,
yeah,
you know, some story, like what is your background that you've, you know, you've gone through tough times, and now what has brought you to Survivor, and what are you playing for? And you are getting to know these people for more than why, like what they do in the show, or like why they're voting, or what they do in a challenge. But like, what has been happening in their life? What traumas have they endured to bring them out here? And that felt a little contrived, because that's not what we're used to on Survivor. Maybe you get two or three people like that per season, but not everybody. And it felt like the cast were really going towards like, we need to find hardships. We need to find hardships. That's like the goal of casting in the new era, at least early on. But then, Phil, we've been doing our prop bet game, or our over-under game, and we're like over under the number of flashbacks we're going to get. And it has fluctuated season to season. And I think that is Survivor learning, like, hey, let's show flashbacks when they become important to the story on the island. We don't need to hear everybody's backstory and everybody's hardships if those don't come to the forefront of what's actually happening in the show, on the beaches. And this is a great example tonight. We didn't get these backstories until now of the Vula tribe, but they all got to share about their, you know, about their family history, essentially, and how they related to one another. And we did get the photographs, and we did get these backstories, but it wasn't like we had got these all in the premiere, or that, you know, some seasons, what was it, like season 46, we had very few. We had like maybe one or two. And then last season, like they are putting them in when they become relevant. And I do think that is much better than saying, okay, everyone we cast needs to have, what is their flashback going to be? What happened to them when they were a kid, or what happened to their family? And this is just a great example. This scene was almost as impactful, I thought, as the Eva scene. Have both of these scenes in one episode. Tremendous storytelling and tremendous television, and we're here for it. But this is the example. This is when you include the flashbacks, when they become important.
Yeah, because I think it was season 42 with Maria, or Mariah, M-A-R-Y-A. I can never remember how her name was pronounced at this point. But her story was like, her brother was one of the first people to die, one of the first nurses or doctors to die of COVID. And it's like, that's what we heard about on day one. It was about Maria's brother, not about her, but about her brother. And I think, like, even with Joe here, we understand that Joe is playing this game because his sister was a big fan, and his sister was a victim of domestic violence and that. But they're still saying, okay, Joe, but what's your reason for being here? What are you going to do? And I'm not saying Maria didn't have, or I think it was Mariah. I'm not saying that she did not have a reason for being there, but it felt like casting had cast her because of that story, because it was a relation to somebody very affected or who died from COVID-19 right after COVID-19 was starting to dwindle down a little bit. And so that was the story. They have figured out, like, that's not what it's all about. Because, you know, when you sit there and you watch this, and if you're looking to apply for season 51 or 52 or anything like that, and you're sitting there saying, well, my family didn't have that crazy of a backstory. Like, my family didn't aren't immigrants to the United States, and my family didn't have to live through horrible times in another country or in America. That doesn't mean you shouldn't apply, because not everybody's going to have that story. I just think it so happened that that's what these four people bonded over. And we're talking about Survivor Gabon over on the Patreon right now. And Marcus and Crystal, Marcus works with Crystal's cousin. And it's like, it's just something that randomly happened and nobody knew that. I think we see that again in Token Chains with Brendan and Taj, where they have somebody who's in common there. And it's like, though, you're out there for so long, you're going to talk. And that is going to lead to people bringing up these things that maybe casting doesn't even know about. And I think that's when it's at its most powerful. And I agree with you. That's when we should see the backstories. And tonight I thought the backstories were implemented perfectly, because it added color to a story that was taking place on the island. And honestly, that Vula 4, like, that's who I'm rooting for. Like, that was so effective. That's who I'm rooting for.
I was so worried they were going to lose the challenge after. I'm like, I was thinking, man, no way. But oh my gosh, they're all so, they, that's how, when you get three or four people saying, we got this to the jury, us four are locked in, we're the new voting block, like, it's us four over and over, I'm like, uh-oh. Like, are they really going to lose again?
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I know. And when I knew it was like Jeff crying, I'm like, are they going to start talking about everything that they talked about? And Jeff's just going to break down. But it was different than that. It was different than that. But
yeah, because that conversation happened before. And then it's like, wait a second. I've seen these ads during March Madness that we're going to get like the most emotional thing ever. And then that scene starts taking place. I'm like, this is pretty heavy and emotional, and I'm enjoying it, but this doesn't seem like advertisement worthy. Like,
yeah,
this can't be it, right? And it wasn't, but I mean, still two big emotional scenes.
And so we start this way and we talk all about the emotional scenes. And for the first time, I think ever, Will, we're not starting the podcast talking about the vote. And this was a pretty crazy vote. So
it was we have a crazy vote. I was shocked, by the way. Like,
I thought Say was done.
I thought Say was so gone. And I mean, I knew there was not going to be a 2-2 vote due to the time like left. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, we don't have time for a revote. I know that that's not the best way to view the show, but you can't help it. Sometimes you're like, there's no way we are getting a 2-2 here. And so if it's a 3-1, then that has to be three votes on Say. There's not really another option. So I thought this was completely foreshadowed. And because it was so foreshadowed with the timing of all that, it made me even more blown away when it was Bianca. So
here's my thing. All week when I had Lauren O'Connell on for predictions, I think I might've even said it last recap, or I definitely said it with Blake on Digging Deeper. All week, I've been saying we're going to get a 2-1-1 if that tribe loses. And here's what's going to happen. We're going to get one vote for Say, or no, we're going to get one vote for somebody. It doesn't matter who, but what's going to end up happening is Chrissy and Mitch are going to make the decision and Cedric's not going to vote for Say. That's what I thought was going to happen. So Cedric votes for Bianca. Say could have possibly voted for Cedric because last week it was weird. So this is where I actually thought it was going to go, is Say was going to vote for Cedric. Cedric was going to vote for Bianca. And then Chrissy and Mitch were going to vote for Say, and Say was ultimately going to go home in a 2-1-1. And so that's where my head was at like the entire time. And then as I'm watching this play out, we see that Mitch votes for Say. We see that, Say votes for Chrissy. And I said, okay, here we go. So when the third vote came out for Bianca, I said, oh, Cedric was going to vote for Bianca because he wasn't going to write Say's name down, whatever. And that's when vote came out for Say or for Bianca, I was like, what just happened?
I thought we were going to flash back because we really didn't get the story, but I do like how right after it's included the conversation where Chrissy is talking to Say, like, did you know that she lost her vote? So then it informs the audience that, hey, Cedric clearly told Chrissy, and Chrissy and Cedric were the two votes on Bianca, and Mitch and Chrissy didn't even vote together, which is who would have predicted that?
Well, and again, kudos to the editors, because this is something else we've complained about, right? You give the audience too much information and you don't actually get authentic blindsides towards us. I was blindsided tonight because I didn't have all the info. I didn't know that Cedric and Chrissy had talked this through and had been this buddy-buddy to pull this move off without getting Mitch involved. When Mitch wrote down Say, I said, okay, I don't know how Say is surviving. And Say survives this episode because of Chrissy and Cedric. And just like last week where they didn't officially tell us that the extra vote was played, but at the beginning of this episode, we hear that the extra vote was played. You don't have to tell us everything at once. Make us wait till the next week, right? If you think about, like, you know, with great episodes of TV, Game of Thrones or whatever the hell's on, I always just go to Game of Thrones because it's the easiest. But like, if you had a crazy plot twist, you didn't have to over explain it in that episode. Let us sit with it for a week and say, well, what the hell just happened? And then let the explanation follow. And I feel like that was so well done in this episode. And I feel for Bianca, but I know some people in the chat right now, and I'm trying to pull up the starred comments, but or the super chats, but I know some people in the chat are saying she was just as screwed as Justin. She had so much more time. And I truly believe that if she doesn't tell Cedric that she lost her vote, I think that she is still in the game, because I think that the thing was, she was worried about pissing off Cedric, but here's what you have to do if you're Bianca in this situation. If it's a 2-2 vote, you have now forced Cedric's hand and you say, Cedric, are you willing to go to rocks to save Say and keep her in the game? Or are you willing to flip and vote with Mitch and Chrissy? Because at that point, they can't vote Bianca out of the game. It's a tie. You have to vote between the two people are tied. Mitch isn't going to vote Chrissy out. Cedric's probably not going to vote, you know, whatever. He's not going to draw rocks so that it's Cedric, Mitch, and Bianca going to rocks. That would be crazy. So he would probably change his vote. And then she has to go explain herself afterwards. But I think you kind of have to do it that way. And this did blow up in her face immediately because Cedric wasn't having it.
Yeah, there was a few ways she could have approached this. And I think she definitely picked the worst one, which was like she kind of half did each one where she her goal was to not tell anybody, which I think would have been smart, like you just said. But she didn't do that all the way because she told one person. And then she could have been, you know, upfront and honest with people she's working with. But she didn't really do that because she tells Cedric right before tribal. And like, that's not good. And we actually had foreshadowing here where Justin even tells us, no, if you tell Cedric right before, his mind's going to start going crazy. And that's not going to work. But now it is funny, Phil, we have Justin going home because he didn't tell Cedric about losing the vote. Mm-hmm. And now we have Bianca going home because she did tell Cedric about losing the vote. So I think it's like, either way, you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't with Cedric. If you lost a vote, you're done to Cedric. It doesn't even matter whether you tell him or whether he finds out later, you're done. I don't think this was the wise move from Cedric, by the way.
I think he's 0-2, but he keeps going.
I know. I think this was pretty bad from Cedric, but I think it's the same mistake that he keeps making, which is he wants to keep playing with Say. I mean, he says not all the way. At some point, she'll become a liability. I think now is that point. You voted for her twice, and he even says as much. He says, yeah, once she's scorned, it's hard for her to come back into my good graces. You know, something of that sentiment. And if you're already identifying that, why do you want to keep working with her? And you have such an easy shot right now to take her out and not in a position that makes him instantly on the bottom. I think that is ultimately his fear here, that like, okay, if it's going to be 4-1 to his knowledge, or even if it's 3-1 once he's informed about Bianca's lost vote, that it will then go against him. He'll be without an ally. But it seems like Mitch and Chrissy like him and that Bianca could have been the next target. I mean, you can work with Bianca maybe. Also, if you've watched the damn show in the past 7 seasons, it merges at 13 every single season. Time. And guess what? There are 14 people left. So just get rid of Say now, and then you're merged. And then you can do whatever you want. You don't have to worry about not having an ally. So I think this was a complete misplay from Cedric and a pretty bad misplay from Bianca. I do think there's a world where Bianca tells Chrissy and Mitch, or tells Cedric and Say, and preps them and says, look, I don't have a vote. We can do a 2-2. Let's be prepared for rocks. Yeah, right. Thanks, James Barber. Great comment here. The new era is so unpredictable, Will. What are you talking about? That's right. Yeah, we might merge at 9. We might merge at 8. We might merge at 14. No, we're merging at 13 every single season.
I love this right now. St. Cliffo, keep cooking, Will. Ash is me. Uncommon Will crash out. Look at you go, man. Just keep cooking. You're
good. So, W Will, W Phil.
You have to change up the Philly and the Willie tonight, you know? I mean, I'm just saying.
No. We do have to get to the Philly and the Willie. This will be the first time. But I do think there's a world where Bianca can be forthright about this to one of these duos. And I think that Chrissy and Mitch would have been the better one to go for, because it seemed like Cedric, you can tell Cedric's like halfway towards flipping. If you get to a 2-2 vote, Cedric's not going to rocks for Say. No. It's just not going to happen. So Bianca's, I think her wisest move is either to do her original plan. Don't tell anyone, get the 2-2 vote. And then, you know, if it goes to rocks, you have a 1-3 shot. Whatever, at least like that's 33% chance to go home. If your tribe decides to go to rocks, which is very unlikely, that's probably the smartest plan. Or go and tell Chrissy and Mitch, say, hey, I like working with you guys. I feel good. I want to let you know we don't have a vote, but we think Cedric's going to flip. I mean, Chrissy and Mitch have a good relationship with Cedric here. So I think you just do a 3-1 on Say. I don't think the reason that they flip this onto Bianca is the reason why Bianca did not want to tell anyone about this. Her reasoning was, if I don't have a vote, then I'm indefensible, basically. Like, I'm defenseless. Like, I can just be picked off, and these two groups of two will just pick me off 4-0, which I don't think would ever really happen, Phil, because if you have two groups of two that are feuding, don't you want to pull in the third member? Like, who really cares if they don't have a vote?
Here's my thinking on this, because if she tells them that she doesn't have a vote, I think what she was scared of is that those pairs were so tight, because Chrissy heard from Cedric, oh yeah, going to vote out Say, and then she finds out from Cedric that's not true. I think she was worried because the pairs were so tight that if they found out Bianca didn't have a vote, they would say, well, I don't want to get rid of my number one. I don't want to get rid of my number one, so let's just boot Bianca. I think that's what she was scared of here.
I think there's a fear there, but from what I saw, it seemed like Mitch and Chrissy got along well enough with Bianca, and that there are very apparent cracks between Say and Cedric. I know they're more apparent to us as the audience because we've seen them go to tribal, but it's very clear to Bianca. I mean, Cedric tells Bianca, I've written her name down before. Like, that's not hidden information. That's not information that only we have as an audience. So I think she was able to use it again. She could also just not tell anybody. She did the half measures here. She like wanted to play both sides. We're like, not tell anybody, but then tell one person at the end. And it completely bit her in the ass.
Yeah. I want to throw up some of these super chats now. They've been here for a little bit. So we got Skylander Gamer TV. Cedric, try not to vote out an ally that actually wants to work with you. Challenge Impossible Edition. Yeah, I mean, Bianca was going to work with him, but I don't know why he feels he trusts Seymour. We'll see.
It's a great comment. And it's like he keeps eliminating people that want to work with them in favor of Say, who we know he's voted for and that he's addressed that she's scorned. And we've heard from Say, I don't trust Cedric. So, like, what is this gameplay?
I know. I'm trying to figure it out. I mean, then we get Jay Byrne Aquatic, who says Cedric came to play. The doctor is in. I mean, he's not wrong. I mean, Cedric did come to play, but I just think Cedric is putting a little too much weight behind, like, Say being willing to play with him.
There was a comment here that I saw. There's been a lot of chat, so I don't know.
Yeah, the chat's been blowing up.
Where it is. It's been firing off. Thank you. We love that. I think it said it was – I forget who said it. I wish I could find it. It's someone commented, is Cedric cooking? And it's like, I don't think so. Just because he's still in, like, I don't think he's playing a good game. I think he's leaving someone in the game that doesn't trust him. And he's getting rid of people that want to work with him.
Can I say what it feels like to me here is, and again, going back to the Gabon references, Cedric almost feels like Sugar in a less chaotic fashion, where it's like he's in control of every vote, but he's not in control of winning the game, like, ever. Like, there's like everything that Cedric is doing is pissing someone off, even if he's a nice guy. And yes, he's in control, but he's not necessarily making the right move. He's playing more emotional, I feel, than he's playing strategically. So yeah, that's what I think there. I mean, yeah. Look, Cedric's stepping up to the occasion, though. I'm entertained by the decisions because that's two in a row that he totally stumped me.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't see where don't you feel as though Say is going to come for Cedric at some point? I mean, it's almost like even last week, we do a tribe swap. And Bianca goes up to Say and says, I want to work with you and Cedric. And Say goes, you want to work with Cedric? Really? I wouldn't do that if I were you. Like, that's the player you're keeping in the game. So we'll see how it goes for him. I don't have high hopes for Cedric.
Let's throw up a worth playing for here with the 999. Always love to get those. Every single vote this season has been advantage-based. When they first introduced advantages season 30, I loved it. I mean, there were advantages before that, but I get what he's saying here. But now I'm so uninterested in advantage strategy. Feels like watching a board game. This is what I was talking about earlier. My hope is that Survivor does get into more of the human complexity again, a little bit more, because I do feel like that's been missing. It's been there in the 40s. There's no doubt about it. We've had our solid characters. We've had solid moments. We've had exciting stuff, Ben's panic attacks and things like that. But I do feel like it's taken a back seat to a lot of the advantages. So that's what I agree here, though. Every single vote in this season has been advantage based, and they've been good, but like they've been exciting tribal councils, but you could have still had exciting tribal councils no matter what. Like tonight, if Bianca's in the swing position, I still think that's an exciting tribal council because she truly would have rather worked with the green side. But if Cedric is genuinely considering flipping on Say, then who knows what's going on? So that's just what I think.
I honestly don't mind the advantages as much as their influence on tribal actually works for me. I think like that kind of more board game element, like, okay, this person doesn't have a vote. It's a dilemma. What do you do? I think Bianca is in a very unique and interesting situation here that I think is fun to discuss and fun to put yourself in. What would you do? Like, you should be the swing vote. You get swapped and it's 2-2-1. You're in the middle. But guess what? You don't have a vote. That is compelling to me. I find that interesting. What I don't find interesting is the amount of time we spend on how these advantages are distributed in the game, whether we're going on these journeys or we're forcing people to, you know, risk their vote. Or that, I think that's the part that bothers me, is that it feels random in how they appear and how they are distributed. But their existence in the game, I think, leads to some really compelling tribal councils. And we have seen that this season. And this season, I do believe, Phil, not for nothing, I think this season is far better for these lost votes of these journeys. And I don't enjoy how the players have lost them and how much time we spent with maybe these idol ciphers. I mean, those haven't been that bad, but like, the lost votes do feel a little bit unfair, but it leads to fun, interesting new gameplay. And for a show that's been on, this is the 48th season, we're having votes that we have not discussed before. And I think that's important. So I'm kind of in there. I think it's just more tweaking it fairness wise and reducing the randomness and luck factor.
That's what I want to say, because I don't think you're making a bad point there, but I feel like it's too much.
I'm guessing. Not.
Yeah, I think it's just too much guessing on the part of the players. That's what drives me crazy. I know you sometimes you make good points. I just think it's too much guessing, and it's too much of, well, who went on a journey? Did they lose their vote? Did they get their vote? Who found an advantage thing? Did they lose their vote? Did they get their vote back? Like, I feel like there's a lot of guessing that's going on, and I don't find that that makes for exciting Survivor. Like, you think about when you go to a game night with your friends, every game you play revolves around some people having more information than others if you're playing like a social deduction game. But that's a social deduction game. This isn't. Like, this is supposed to be a strategic game. This is supposed to be something that you can put the pieces in order. And every now and then there can be something that throws you off. But I agree with you about the Bianca situation, because it's like, well, we did get to see how Bianca would play this, and you put yourself in her shoes, and what would you do, and how would that work, and all that. But at the same time, I'm like, we did see it with Justin too. You know, like, we saw something very similar. So I do feel that the lost votes can become very repetitive. Advantages, I'm at the point now, I will take an onslaught of advantages to just get rid of any of these lost vote disadvantages. Because I think that it's having a
similar effect. Be careful what you wish for, though. No, but because
I think it's having
a lot of these advantages, though. The advantage we saw already this season that Thomas had was steal a vote. So somebody is then losing their vote, or you have like safety without power. Guess what? That person isn't voting.
I hate that Thomas, to steal that vote successfully, that would have to steal a vote from somebody who actually has a vote. And if he steals it from somebody who has no vote, then he doesn't get anything. Like, again, it's just too much guessing. And if people are going to lose their votes anyway from advantages, why do we need them to also lose their vote on their own? That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't hate the lost vote as much as you do. My problem becomes when the player doesn't have the choice for the risk. That's where I draw the line. If there's a player who wants to say, you know what, I'm going to risk my vote, and I know that this outcome is possible, but I'm still going to take this decision. I'm going to make this decision because of like the context of the game. Like, maybe I'm not in a good spot in my tribe and I'm already down in numbers. So guess what? My vote doesn't matter right now. I'd rather have an idol. I'd rather risk my vote for a chance at an idol. I find that compelling. I find that interesting. I don't think the lost vote is the issue.
But you're choosing it.
It's more when it's forced upon you. I think that is the real issue.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Let's get worth playing for here. What I find interesting is food drama. My favorite moments in Survivor are food-based. We didn't really have any food drama today, but we did have the Sanctuary make its first appearance for the over-under game.
We had a little food drama. What are you talking about?
What was the food drama?
We had two. I think we had two instances.
Oh, that's true. With the Kiwi. Today. Kiwi etiquette.
I think we had Kiwi Gate coming out. Mm-hmm. Star eating. Save not even participating in the challenge and then coming home and eating fruit. We also, this is the one I thought of first, was Mary saying, we got plenty of food at camp. We got all this fruit from the last challenge.
Yeah,
that
right.
was some food drama too. It still comes up, and we are doing Gabon over. We just started doing Gabon over on the Patreon. Every season matters. I forgot about some of the food drama there, or just the food stories. I mean, I forget that they caught a turtle and made turtle soup. I was like, turtle soup? And they were all like, this is the best thing I've ever had. I mean, now I kind of want to try some turtle soup after that.
I just like thinking about Crystal kicking over the bucket of rice. That's my favorite.
Well, there's that too. And then there's Dan K also, you know, eating a double portion of rice. So no, I'm all in on the food drama. And even though we are in an advantage heavy, gameplay heavy, strategy heavy era of the show, we still did get some food drama tonight.
And Mackenzie L. Burns here with David and his milk. David got his milk. He drank that whole stuff, not that 2% crap. And then he said, I'm going to throw up. Dude, can you imagine just being out there? You're not really eating much. It's been 9 days. It's hot. And then you just drink like an entire, like, what did he drink? Like a liter of milk? What the hell are you thinking? I don't care how much milk you drink. What are you thinking?
Oh, I disagree. And wait, really? You know the milk I imagine is cold.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying it's not cold. I'm just saying that's so heavy. It's just going to sit like lead, dude. You're just going to poop your brains out the rest of the day.
I mean, milk, believe it or not, milk has a lot of nutrients and calcium that are actually very good for you. And when your body's depleted of energy, I think milk is something you obviously want to be drinking. Are you not a milk? Are you a milk person? Tell me about what's your milk intake like?
I mean, I don't drink milk, but also like I just know how milk would make me feel, and like milk. I'm not saying milk's bad for you. I'm just saying when you have nothing else in your system and you just chug that much milk, he drinks so much milk, dude. Like it's hot and you're just going to like, that's like go eat a brick of cheese out there. That's awful.
What is it being hot have to do with anything? I think if it's hot and you get an ice cold glass of milk,
feel like crap.
I think you're throwing down, you know, chocolate croissants and other pastries. I think a cold glass of milk goes great with that. I drink milk only when I have cookies. Like to me, I've cookies and milk is like the,
you almost burned down my apartment. My, because of it.
Number one combo is milk and cookies. So I keep milk in my fridge, and obviously I'll use it in, you know, cooking, you know, if you're making like eggs or something or other meals, it's a good ingredient to have, but I'm never drinking milk unless I am also enjoying a cookie. That's kind of my,
I mean, I get that. I don't drink milk on its own. I mean, I'm not lactose intolerant, but like milk really, like if I have too much milk, it'll affect me big time. But I just feel like, dude, I just feel like if you're out there, you don't
want to. Maybe you are lactose intolerant. Maybe that's like your experience with milk because it makes you
in your
feel
body. I know. I like Goombas here. Will explaining milk to Phil. Like you're, I'm not an oat milk guy.
There's a reason. There's a reason why, like, you know, an entire subsect of animals, like all mammals, like they literally are raised on milk and grow from it. Like it's how life is like based. Mammal life is based on milk.
All I'm saying is
so don't hate on it. Okay.
You give me an ice cold lemonade. You give me an ice cold iced tea. You give me an ice cold beer. You give me an ice cold.
I'm not dipping my chocolate croissant into ice tea or lemonade.
I don't need ice cold milk out on the beach of Fiji when then I'm going to go back to camp and I'm just going to crap my brains out because all I have in me is milk and sugar. Like there's no way. No way.
You got some carbs. You got some carbs in there to absorb some of that milk.
Unreal.
I'm Team David.
I'll be honest, Will, if there's anybody who's going to dip a chocolate croissant in a beer, it's you. If you had a Bud Light, you
in
would
a
do it.
Beer?
Yeah.
I don't like sweets. Sweets and beer don't mix. With beer, you want like fresh fries or something, or wings or something. You want something salty. You want some umami. You want some. You don't want sweet, but sweet and milk, great combo.
The great combo. Damn. But anyway, so David got his milk. That was drama. Was it sore loser or sore winner? Let me hear it. Was Mary a sore winner or was Say a sore loser?
It probably depends how this was edited. What Mary said, it's hard to take that out of context. Like she did basically brag and say, we didn't even need this. We got so much food back home. And you have, you know, two tribes that have not been eating as well. So, I mean, probably not the best thing to say. I don't know if it's sore winner versus just like maybe you're a little overexcited. I think a sore winner is when you intentionally rub it in. I think there has to be some intent behind it. I didn't see any malintent from Mary. And then I think you can call Mary out, but like the second you call Mary out, you're kind of a sore loser, I think. Like just take the L, don't say anything. You can be annoyed at camp. You don't need to say anything publicly. So I'm seeing some different types. We're talking about milk in the chat with different kinds of milk. I mean, I'm a 2% guy. I'm sorry, Dan. Yeah, I am a 2% guy. I've seen some soy milk, no oat milk, no fake milk. You need the real stuff.
I will
stuff.
Say, though, so before I had to have my surgery way back in the day, quick aside, I started eating the Ben & Jerry's almond milk ice creams because I literally couldn't have dairy for a period of time.
You're anti-milk.
No, but dude, I like literally wasn't allowed to eat it. I enjoy ice cream, but like I was eating like their almond milk one. Very good. It was very, very, very good. I will say, like, because it's still like sweet, it added like a little bit of a different flavor. It was very good. So I do recommend that. But no, if I'm gonna drink milk, I'm gonna drink milk. I'm an adult. Drink milk. Anyway.
Or you a baby?
Drinking whole milk, dude. I don't know. That's weird. David's a wild guy. All right, where are we at? What the hell are we talking about? Yeah, I think that Say probably shouldn't have blown up on the mat. That's all it was. I think Mitch was right.
No, I think
mouth shut here.
Like,
we don't need that.
Get You can be angry at that comment from Mary. I understand that. It did feel a little rubbing it in, but you don't need to call it out.
They really set this up to be Say's boot episode. And I'm so grateful she didn't go home, because I think Say is just so much fun to watch on TV. Say is giving kind of like Venus vibes, but I think maybe a little bit more self-aware on the season of like where she stands and a little bit more in control. I don't feel like Venus ever had any control. I'll watch it. I'll watch all day.
I said this from the premiere. It's like the person who's aggressively playing hard and is upfront with you about it gives me Rome vibes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like following around somebody who's looking for the idol, like that was, you know, very mm-hmm. similar.
Which is, I have Saul on the podcast at 1 p.m. on Sunday.
No way.
Yeah. Wow. That was good timing. Look at that segue. Good job, Will. Good look job. So yeah, Saul, 1 p.m. Sunday. We're going to do predictions and power rankings. I can't wait to hear. He gets the merge. So good for him. Is it mergatory? We don't know. Anyway,
there will be some shenanigans, I imagine.
Yeah, it won't just be a 13 people going to tribal council and one person is safe. That's for sure. Let's talk about, because we're 45 minutes
in. Last season. We didn't do that last season, did we?
I thought we did.
Didn't,
what was
didn't we do that last season though?
Oh, that's no, we did. You're right. No,
Rome went home. I think yeah. you said that as like a joke, but I'm like, Phil, I think that literally happened in season 47 where Jeff's like, guess what? Normal, just the normal tribal council.
And then final 12 was absolute insanity.
Mm-hmm.
Final 12, yeah, because then final 12 was where it was what 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people were safe. Yeah.
Wow, look at this super chat. Have we even released our episode about this on the Patreon? We literally talked all about this.
We
Mary
didn't.
Should eat no, food that, in that front of Say, tomorrow, like Randy yep. did to Crystal. We recorded that earlier today, and we talk about that. So
we do.
Thank That's you, like, Ryan Chan. Yeah.
Nobody will ever be a villain like Randy anymore.
So good.
All right. Let's talk about Star because I think that this was a fun episode from Star. We have Star sit out the challenge, see Eva go through what she went through, and then Star comes back and finally we get who Star is as a person. And I think that was so good. I was so happy that we finally got to see Star as a person. And when Star is talking to Eva, you could see that her opinion of Eva changed like that. Just immediate of, I thought you were totally just like, you're out of your element. You don't know how to handle this, blah, blah, blah. And you could see the respect that Star had for Eva in this moment. I thought that was wonderful. And I'm really happy we got to see that side of Star. And I will also say this.
Pumped up.
She was. And she talked about, I have family members who are on the spectrum, so this means a lot. And I will say this, and I could be wrong on this, but I do think the reason we might not have seen so much of Star early on is because a lot of her content probably was about, oh my God, Eva's driving me crazy. We need to get her out. And I think the editors saw that and knew how Star reacted in this moment and see how Star is going to be with Eva moving forward and said, we don't need to put that in. We don't need to make Star, because Star doesn't know. Like, you can't fault Star in this moment if she's annoyed. You're on Survivor. If somebody annoys you, they annoy you. If you want to vote them out, you want to vote them out. Like, everything is fair in Survivor. But I think the edit might have done a little bit of a job here of protecting Star, rightfully so, because I think the way Star handled this was so perfect. But what I do have to say is, should she have given the idol to Eva, Will? What do you think about that?
I was a little confused on who actually ended up with the
Eva
idol.
Has Eva has the idol. I know to Eva.
I know Eva solved the clue, mm-hmm. and we're pumped for that. Like, that was just a huge high after a very emotional day. Like, it was, I mean, we heard from Eva about how huge of a moment that was, being the one to crack the code. That alone is amazing. But yeah, she does end up with it.
Says to Eva, you keep that idol and says, it's your idol now. So it is Eva's idol.
Okay. Fully Eva's yeah. idol. Yeah. That's, I mean, not a good game move, but if she's feeling it in her, I mean, we heard a confessional from Joe, I believe in the premiere, I will sacrifice my game in order for Eva to be comfortable. Like, I'm not gonna let it. And obviously we saw that play out at the challenge tonight, but this could be a similar story from Star. Like, and I agree with what you said, Phil, that maybe we didn't see a lot from Star because she could be having confessionals like, why am I not getting a good vibe from Eva? Or maybe there's some awkwardness, maybe. And like, she doesn't have any reason to think that Eva has autism. So now that she has this new information, it could be something where it's like, okay, this is now making sense. Now I'm like, now I like fully, I know you so much better now. And Star's pumped, has a new ally, has a new friend, is very excited for what Eva's just done and how she can inspire children and parents who are in, you know, dealing with autism. But giving up the idol, that's farther than Joe already went. You know, even like Joe going over and offering a hug and to hold her hands and to calm her down and really expose a very solid relationship, a game relationship. That's one thing. Giving away an idol is like, that's next level.
JD says here, it's always a good idea to give your advantages to people. Sarcasm or sincere? I mean, at this moment, everybody knows that that idol's been found. So if Star keeps it, what's it really doing for her at that point, right? Everybody knows she has it. They're going to try to find a way to flush it. Now Eva has it. Not really doing Eva any good, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know. We are coming off season 46 where no one played their idols and everyone got voted out with it. And we heard Kyle already name drop that. And if that is a mentality from the players this season and this idol is out there, it could just be like, hey, you play it and you get a free pass at the merch. I mean, that might be as far as it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see what ends up happening. I mean, you know, it could be good for Eva. Yeah. If we get to Mergatory or whatever shenanigans, like we were saying, it could be good for her there. But to me, it just doesn't seem like it's going to really be all that impactful. What do you
think? It's an idol. An idol is an idol. Yeah. It isn't like an idol with an expiration date. This isn't an idol with certain rules or contingencies. This is like a full-blown idol, good to Final Five. Like,
sarcasm, bad move.
Yeah, you know, when did that become like something that's not a big deal, Phil?
You don't think that would be easy to blindside Eva or Star with this, though? I feel like it's going to be easy to blindside them, and it gives incentive to want to vote them out. Like, it would give incentive to want to vote Star. She has an idol. Let's blindside her before she knows. Same thing goes for Eva here. Why not?
Sure, but I still think you'd rather have the idol than not. I think it allows you to do more things. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we could debate would you rather have an idol or not have an idol if everyone knows about the idol? I don't know. That's probably a good debate to have. But we've seen idols used in a variety of ways. I mean, it could be a way to gain trust. It could be, you know, a way to make a move. It could be a way just to get it, have something for the jury. You know, I had an idol. I played it to get rid of it. I got the target off my back. And then you playing it, you know, incorrectly, that could be your move. You know, I wanted to get the heat off me. Like, there's a lot of ways to use an idol to your benefit.
Now we see Star do that, right? We see Star give her idol to Eva, like a respect thing, all that. How do you think the players are going to handle when it finally comes time to vote Eva out? Because at the end of the day, everybody wants to win $1 million. Everybody wants to win this game. You want the title of Soul Survivor. Do you see people having a harder time voting Eva out now that they know all of this, especially after Star just gave up her idol? Joe went over and hugged her and kind of gave up, you know, any type of secrecy there. Like, what do you think about that?
I think Jeff actually said it pretty well. Like, you know, Eva, you might blindside Joe. Joe, you might blindside Eva. That's okay. I think Jeff wanted, especially because Jeff called it out and said, Joe, why don't you go do your thing here? Because this is now inside information that we are revealing. I think Jeff wanted to make it clear that this is separate from the game, even though it's kind of impossible to do that in Survivor. But he wanted to be clear, like, you guys can still blindside each other. Like, please don't let this, like, really, you know, totally overtake the game. Like, you guys still should play hard. You should still want to win, because that's what Jeff's MO is, especially in the 30s and 40s. Like, it's all about, this is a game, like, have your relationships, but come to play, come to win. And that's why in the new era, we've seen so many times when people get blindsided, they go, oh, good move. Or like, you got me. Or like, damn, I was going to get you if you didn't get me. Like, and not the stare down from Michaela, you know, or like not people being livid, you know. It's way more friendly. It's way more we're all playing a game. And I think Jeff wanted to set that tone. So I don't think that now, like, I do think this puts a target on Eva, but I don't think people are going to have like have trouble voting her off. I think it's going to be like, Eva's got to go. I'm sorry. And I think Mitch might be in a similar, you know, we really haven't gotten Mitch's backstory yet. I mean, we've heard it a little bit, but like, Mitch has a pretty unique story as well. One that during the preseason, I told you, Phil, I'm like, how have we not had a person with a speech impediment on this show yet? And obviously, Christy from Amazon, but that was because she was hard of hearing. It was, you know, something completely different. This is like just a speech impediment. And it's like, that's a very interesting story and something that really, that shouldn't hinder you in the game of Survivor all that much. So we have that coming as well. And that might put a target on Mitch's back. So these are all part of the game.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think Jeff saying that in that moment really was a big thing and was good. And I'm excited to see how it's going to play out. I mean, I think Final 13 is going to be awesome. There's another thing I wanted to say, and then I totally lost my train. Oh, here you go. So, you know, I love confessionals. And I always say, if you don't get a confessional in an episode, you can't win. I take that back after tonight. Do you know who didn't have a confessional? One person didn't have a confessional tonight.
David?
Nope. David had one.
Oh, they snuck David in. Because we've already... Did Joe not have one?
Joe did not have one.
Which is crazy. Like, I thought we were going to hear from Joe about this whole ordeal.
I feel like Joe really was simultaneously the second biggest person on this episode. And also like, but he didn't get a confessional. And it was because he had content when they were talking about the families. We got the backstory with his family. They showed it despite him not getting an authentic confessional. He's still laying there talking about his family. And then the scene with Eva, I mean, that was Joe and Eva for 5 minutes. I mean, that was incredible.
I still don't think Joe is winning, though. I never.
I don't either, but it's still one of those things. I'm not writing Joe off because of that.
He basically told us he was going to, you know, not put his game ahead of Eva. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is going to have consequences. Like, I think this isn't good for Joe's game. I mean, let's be real here. What happened?
Yeah, tonight? It's not.
Here's somewhere where I want to go is... The very first scene, I was not expecting this. I don't know if you talked about this with Lauren at all. Kyle and Camilla, because of the way the votes went down, it was Kyle vote doesn't count. Kyle vote doesn't count. Kyle vote doesn't count. Three mm-hmm. votes on to Kyle. And then
yeah.
one vote for Thomas. They don't know. Do they not know that
there Camilla was a and Kyle second both vote? Wrote
Thomas's
there was a second
though?
Vote. I don't actually know. There was a second vote. I don't know if Kyle says, well, I played an extra vote or
right.
it seems or if Camilla votes. I think they know that that's how it went down. I think they know Camilla ended up voting with Kyle. And I think Camilla probably played it off as like he had an idol. I don't know.
That wasn't clear to me because it seemed like they were trying to put this out there where this was a rogue play from Kyle. That Kyle... He sniffed this out. He's like, I could tell someone went through my bag and that, you know, Kyle and Camilla did not come up with this plan and pull it off together and that they still are at odds with each other and that even potentially Camilla wrote down Kyle's name. Now, I don't know how far they discussed this. I imagine at some point Chiayne and Joe talked it out, but we never really got the resolution to that because then the four... you know, have that scene and they decide to come together as a unit that we're going to be a four moving forward instead of, you know, going at each other. But that was, I did enjoy that. It didn't occur to me that they would have been able to keep up the ruse that they did not, you know, like each other or like get along. So.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure. Well, maybe we'll get clarity on that in the future here. But I mean, it seemed like, you know, that, I mean, Kyle had to do what he had to do. And like he said, they didn't know I had an idol. Somehow they went through my bag and didn't see it. And so, you know, I was able to say all that to them. And I think Chiayne and Joe are so struck by the moment. They're just like, what the hell just happened?
There was just like, like Thomas randomly got idled out. It wasn't that, you know, Camilla was in on it too.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. And if the four are going to work together, they should probably hash that out. What happened?
Yeah, and I'm sure that they might have done it, and it might just not have been put in, you know?
Yeah. And so, I mean, we know what happened, so
yeah,
maybe they don't need to tell us.
We're 58 minutes in, Will. You want to Philly and Willie it, you know, first time?
Really, sure.
Really do it.
Let's do the Philly and Willie. You go, man.
I think that the player of the episode, I'm not going to go the route of, like, Eva gets it because of her story and everything. I get that. I understand that if she wins player of the week, I understand that. And I know she was handed an idol and everything like that, but I think player of the week, I know that this is going to sound kind of crazy, but I think it's Chrissy. I think Chrissy is player of the week because Chrissy had all the information. She went against Mitch to do what she felt was better for her game and to keep Say in. And I think that Chrissy, most people aren't going to be talking about her and people aren't going to be thinking about her. I think that this actually might have been a good move for her game. I think it was a bad move for Cedric because Say is always going to be willing to vote Cedric out. And I think Chrissy knew that. And I think Chrissy talking to Say enough, they might not get along at all, but she also knows that like Say's a wild card and Bianca lied to her and Bianca's a gamer and it weakens the Loggy tribe. So I think it's probably Chrissy. I really do. I don't know who else she could make it. It can't be anybody from Vula. And I don't think it should be anybody from the Eva tribe because really Star and Eva both could have gotten it. So I think it's Chrissy.
Yeah, it's funny. We talked through this vote, but we didn't talk through it. I mean, we talked about, you know, the two emotional scenes and like a lot has happened this episode and we had to get to the milk, obviously, but we did not discuss this vote from Chrissy's perspective. And I think once she, because, you know, the main reason is because we don't even get her perspective. We don't hear from her until Tribal and we don't get to see the conversation that clearly happened between Cedric and Chrissy. And I imagine that it came out in that conversation that Bianca is completely playing both sides.
Yeah.
Like she kept going up to both pairs saying, I'm with you. We're three. And when Cedric and Chrissy get together, that's the information that really paints the target on Bianca's back. So I do think from that perspective, because like, I guess at this point, Phil, we can say that Bianca was more on the side of Mitch and Chrissy. Like she was with them.
She was on the side of Cedric. I think that's what's crazy here is I think he might have actually lost an ally in losing Bianca because I think she really wanted to.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. But if we're talking in terms of duos, like which duo was she going to side with here? It was Chrissy and Mitch because she wanted Say to be gone. It doesn't mean she didn't have her own thing going with Cedric. And Cedric was probably her closest ally because it's the only one she told about losing a vote. But it doesn't feel as though Chrissy eliminated a great ally, especially because, look, they swapped last episode and we're merging next episode. So Bianca can go do her thing when they merge, and it doesn't seem like Chrissy and Bianca were that bonded. So I'm with you. I do think this was a good move for Chrissy, especially when you learn that Bianca's been lying to you, not only about like losing a vote. That's one thing to, you know, conceal that. That's information about your game you don't want out there. It could put a target on your back, but also that she was, you know, going to Cedric and Say and playing both sides. Get her out of there. So I'm with you. Yeah. I think Chrissy, we didn't get to see it, but she was the one. I mean, she was the one who pulled the trigger. So
yeah, sure. And
it makes more sense for Chrissy than it does for Cedric.
Yeah. Ash's me says Chrissy literally had power to choose anyone to vote out. And yeah, that's where my head goes is you could argue with Cedric, but I think that Cedric voted out somebody who wanted to work with him because, you know, Bianca lost Thomas. She has no number one now. So she wants to work with somebody. I think that Cedric voted out somebody who wanted to work with him to keep around somebody who's ready to vote him out of the game the first chance she gets. So I think this is a bad move from Cedric. So I'm going to give it to Chrissy because I think Chrissy set herself up here where, Mitch is never going to vote. What?
Okay.
I'm giving it to Chrissy.
Okay. No, I'm just making
sure. Did my sound go weird or something?
No. I thought you said something else. I think it's time we get to the Willy.
Okay, let's get to the Willy, the big one here, the Willy.
I think it goes to Cedric. I don't know who else to give it to, even though he's alive still, and he's you know, chugging along through this game. But now 2-for-2 and eliminating somebody that wants to work with you and keeping someone in the game that is actively against you, that gets the Willy for me. I don't think there's any argument.
I mean, I don't disagree. I mean, the other one you could argue is Star because she gives her idol to Eva, but honestly, I'm not that upset about that because I don't think that's like a terrible move.
Especially, I mean, there is a point there that like there's so much heat on this idol already. You know that Shaheen and Joe both know about it, and now Shaheen and Joe are like so locked in with Kyle and Camilla that like that idol could be a liability. I hear you there, but also you just gave it to Eva, who Eva's the one who cracked the code. Like it'd be one thing if Star cracked the code and then gave it to Eva. That'd be a little bit like, okay. But like Eva had a big day, big emotional moment at the challenge. She's the one who solves the puzzle. And that's like, I don't fault it. I fault Cedric way more for keeping an enemy in the game and eliminating an ally. That's literally the opposite of what you want to do when you go to tribal council. When you go to tribal council, you keep your allies safe and you eliminate people that are putting your name out there. He did the exact opposite of that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I really do. I you know, it's funny because the chat was saying Cedric. And I'm like, no, I think it was a bad move from Cedric. And I think the first time they voted out Justin was a bad move. And Cedric's been in power positions. But I think both of these moves, voting out Justin and then voting out Bianca, they moved Cedric further away from being able to win the game, even if he was in control of those moves. He's further away from being able to win. And Chrissy is closer to being able to win. I just think Chrissy, we haven't seen much of her, so maybe people are like, yeah, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Really, the MVP.
I hope we get a flashback. I really want a flashback.
I think we might get a that, but like,
I was almost expecting it at Tribal.
We could get it next episode where like they come back and talk about it. I think the first confessional for sure next week is Chrissy or Cedric saying, you know, I went and told about Bianca's situation and this is what happened. And that's why Chrissy really played it up and said, you guys didn't realize she didn't have a vote, huh? That's why there were four of us. This is why I did it. I think that's her more talking to Mitch and being like, Mitch, you were left out of that. Don't you forget it. I got told and I saved the day. The real MVP though, the real Philly should be David, because David was going to get no confessionals. And we know he's going to win the season. He has to. And then we get a confessional from David where he says, I need to be the one who figures out the puzzle. And then he doesn't figure out the puzzle, but the editor still made sure to put that in amidst all of the chaos and all of the focus being on Eva and Star. They still managed to make sure that David got a confessional there. So maybe that should be MVP. But yeah, I think we're spot on. Milk gets the Philly.
Milk gets the Philly. Yeah, and it seems like there's some confusion. The Philly is the good thing you want. Player, you know, the best player, and the Willie is the worst player of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we got it. I think we nailed it. Look at Trevor Eisenhower with the dreams here. You guys need some good production value. It'd be great. Images of survivors popping in and out, focusing in and out, Phil and Will, plus the main long shot of the both of you. Boom. Yeah, let's just like hire a production team. Well, we're going to need a couple more of those super chats, guys. Trevor, I like the idea, but we're going to need a couple more super chats if we're going to be doing that. We're lucky we can turn on StreamYard and show up every day. Anything else we can cover from this episode?
I think we covered it, man. That was a good one. What are your thoughts on this season so far?
It's fun.
I think the last three episodes have been very good. I think the first two were a little like, where are we going? I don't know that I fully like know all the cast that well. Like, we're going in the merge. It feels like we're merging very quickly. And I know it's like, I'm the one who already said it. It's at 13 every new era season. I just feel as though we merge more like, you know, the players better. And maybe it's because we've got the Vula tribe lose. You feel like you know everybody? You feel like you got a good read on where everyone's at?
Camilla, Kyle, Shaheen, Joe, Eva, David, Mary, Say, Mitch. That's nine people. Cedric. I feel like I know.
But did we know anything about like Mary, that tribe with Charity and Eva and like Star? Like, where, if they were going to tribal council, what would have happened?
I don't know. And I think because like, after the immunity challenge, we see Star tell everybody about, hey, let's go find the idol. I think we'll never get the answer. It probably would have been Star, though. That would have been my guess.
Or Charity, maybe.
Yeah, or Charity. Or Charity. I could see Charity being the boot next week. She's had a weird edit. It's been all over the place. Mm-hmm. It's been all over the place. Although she did say she got five cavities on Survivor on Instagram today. So I don't know if you're going to get five cavities in 12 days, but we'll see.
What?
That's what she said on Instagram. She said Survivor gave her five cavities.
I mean, you can't even get five cavities in 26 days.
I know. So anyway. All right. Well, that'll cover it then.
Unless you're like just constantly chowing down on candy and
coral,
drinking soda.
Yeah.
But like you're not, I mean, you're on Survivor. You're not doing
that. Oh, she blamed the fruit reward.
One fruit reward is gonna give you five cavities. I'm not a dentist, but that seems like that doesn't add up.
Yeah.
I don't think the timeline works.
All right. Blake and I are going to be back tomorrow with Digging Deeper. Sunday, I'll be live with Saul at 1 o'clock, predicting next episode. jump over to the Patreon, patreon.com/thespecialist. Check out everything we're doing over there. Also, I haven't done this yet all season. We have Deal with Russell Muscle again. So his idle plays, if you want to get yourself a puzzle, if you want to get, he has these great puzzles that he puts out. So go check that out. The link is in the description. I keep forgetting to say it, but it's in the description. So make sure you check that out. Tell Blake to focus, says Shane Cup. Yeah. Okay. Trevor Eisenhower says, when's the Dondi recap? 1 o'clock today. It already happened. So go watch it. That was a crazy, crazy episode. But yeah, that's it. Thank you all so much for listening. Like this video, subscribe to the channel. And yeah, like, let us know what you thought about this episode. A lot going on. And last thing, and I'm not going to give Will time to respond. I lost my last pick. Blake lost his last pick. Will has lost 3 of his first 4. You are never allowed to pick first ever again, Will. Never again.
I guess I forgot Bianca was on my team.
She was your fourth pick. Crossed my mind
with everything. Yeah. There you go. I mean, I like that Bianca and Thomas duo. I mean, they were destined for big things until the tribe swap.
Cedric is your nemesis.
I got swap screwed. I got
Justin and Bianca.
I know. Just get rid of Say.
I love it, dude. Never
the person that you voted for twice.
If that happens, your team might be in first place. Anyway, that's it. We'll see you guys all next time.
See ya.